You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Undeniably, artificial intelligence is no longer a distant future. It is here, shaping the very fabric of how information is gathered, processed, and delivered. From algorithms that write headlines in seconds to machine learning systems that filter through mountains of data, AI is deeply embedded in the newsroom. But with this convenience comes a set of ethical dilemmas. Can machines capture the nuance, the empathy, and perhaps the accountability that journalism demands? Who is responsible when AI goes wrong? And as deepfakes blur the line between reality and fabrication, how do we protect truth in an era where technology can manipulate it so easily? Tonight, we're exploring the ethics of AI in news production, a conversation about trust, transparency, and the very soul of journalism in a digital age. And who better than a marketing maven, our very own station manager, Zanele Zama. Hello.
Hi, Mpumi. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm tired. I'm good. I hope the network holds.
I know. And you guys are so busy. So let's keep this conversation brief but impactful.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's set the scene, right? Where are the biggest concerns being raised right now about AI in news production? And why should the average news consumer care?
To answer that question, right, I'll use this story that we were meant to use in our class for media ethics, right? Mm. So there was a shootout happening in New York.
Yeah.
This is in America, right?
Yeah.
And then the shootout happened. And then apparently there was a riot.
Mm-hmm.
But then guess who broke the news that there is a shootout in New York?
Yeah.
It was a news center in Delhi, in
Whoa.
India, right? They were like breaking news. A shootout has happened in this particular place. There's a thing. They went onto Twitter and X, now as we call it.
Mm.
They got screenshots of people speaking about the shit and everything else. It, a lot of things were happening. Like they had the story running an hour in. And then this editor was sitting somewhere in New York, right? And then she calls another media house. She's like, wait, I'm seeing this thing on Twitter saying that there's a shootout. What's happening?
Mm-hmm.
And then the people there, they're like, no, there's no such thing.
Oh.
You know, we are here, we are on the story, there is no such thing. And remember, the news site in Delhi, they've already profiled the shooter, saying the shooter is from this religion, is a male, is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is their race. They were like, no, this is not actually what has happened. So the moral of the article that they made us read that, and then we were discussing, is that the news agency, for example, in Delhi, in India, they were able to break the news for that is happening 1,000 kilometers away without verifying it. Guess what they used? They were using AI.
Oh,
they were using AI to feed into it, because with AI, we feed into it, right? We feed into it, and it's able to do that. And that's when now they made us to study and look at how AI actually hallucinates, right? It tells you what you wanted to say, and it can get things wrong. That's why you need to verify. So to answer your question with that whole story is that one of the biggest concerns that are there, or challenges that newsrooms are actually facing, is that issue of now wanting to break the news first.
Mm.
It does not have the news values we have, such as objectivity.
Yes.
Yeah, that one is debatable most of the time. you know, being truthful, like, you know, plain facts, speaking to sources and everything else. AI does not do that, right? It will get code from you and me on X and everything else. That thing is not verified. You don't know if Zanele is a credible source to be quoting for this particular story or not. But then it's doing that. So it's that issue of, like, it doesn't have the news values. And as much as we can, these days, we are able to write papers, we're able to write stories, and then take it to another AI agency and say, humanize this. But it doesn't have that human touch. We can use the prompts, you know, to make it try and be human, but it does not have that, you know. So one of those concerns is those things, that it does not have those things. Is it a good tool? Yes, we're not saying it's not a tool we should not use. But we are just saying that it's becoming a concern, because now you can just log in there. I want to write a story about something, for example, that's happening where I am now in Toyando. It can make up things for me, you know, and then I can carry on that. And then it becomes something that is major, that people are saying, oh, this thing has happened. And you find that it's actually not there. And it does not do fact checking, which as journalists is something that we do with each and every single story.
Yeah. You know, what you're saying is so interesting to me, because even when I was young, watching the news, it was almost lifeless. The presenters or the journalists would just come on there and read. I remember before we understood what it actually meant, let's say five people have died, you'll hear a journalist say, at least five people have died. And we're like, not understanding what it was. So what you're saying about AI not humanizing the story or the experience is so interesting, because the news have never felt human. They've just felt like facts on facts on facts. So when did that now become a thing? Or has it always been a thing, but the way it's presented is just different?
So humanizing news, Wenampumine, has always been there. It's also one of the core things of journalism. Even though when we report news, so there are types of news that we report, right? You're gonna get your hard news, your hard stories, and we focus on the five W's and an H: where, who, where, why, how, right? That's when you're listening, maybe, for example, now at 7 o'clock, you'd be listening to maybe you're watching on TV. Let's do TV. You are watching there on TV. You may find that the stories they're telling you straight. At least five people have died in an accident on the N1 in Johannesburg, near Woodmead. Passengers drivers are advised to take, you know, N3, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But then now that is the hard news that we have there. And then we have the human interest news stories where, yes, they do have the five W's and an H, but depending on the style of the person that they're doing, they can write a feature for you, where, even if you are reading it, right, where we can tell you maybe, because now I'm just going to use random news stories that they're in the cycle, so that maybe our listeners can follow, right? Let's say maybe when we look at the Zambian story currently happening now, with the former president, Edgar Lungu, instead of me, for example, reporting and saying, the former president Lungu died at the age of 68. He's not yet been buried because of the court battle, blah, 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 blah. But then now when you featureize that, now you would go and say, now you see, I'm telling you about my assignment that I wrote. You would go on to say that, for example, on this particular date, when the sun was, you know, was broke through the clouds, blah, 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 the sun were raised, you know, the birds were chirping, everything was lovely, but the Lungu family was mourning because a different cloud, you know, was hanging around. So you humanize them, like, we tell you a story without taking away the fact that he died, the fact that he's going to court, but then now we'll be saying, like, it was a blow to blow in a courtroom. You understand those things? So there are different types of doing all of those things. And some people would say, hey, news is too straight. But it depends on what kind of news that you consume. Hence, we have all these types. And people can say, no, Amara, with AI, you know, we get the facts straight and everything else, but you're not going to get the whole facts because it does not verify the facts. Yes, it can give you the five W's and an H. I can command it now to say, give me the five W's and an H on this particular story. It can do that.
Yeah.
But where is it getting the facts? Do you understand? Where are the sources of that? How is it quoting Mpumi without having spoken to Mpumi? You understand? Because some things that we do as journalists is, when we speak to you, if it's face to face, for example, We study your body language as well. You know, there's been this we were discussing it in class the other day. This lady, I forgot her name, man. The lady, she's accused, because she's still standing trial, of killing her child, right? And then it was like, someone was like, but she was not even mourning. You know how a mother would mourn, like when they're looking at her, you know, in court, it was not giving that. Now we had to debate the whole issue of, but how do we know that she was not mourning? What if she was in shock? You know, those kind of things. But then now when the AI agent writes that story for you, it's just going to tell you that so-and-so is in court because they killed their child. However, we will bring in the emotion of saying, looking distraught, looking lost, maybe in the court, in the court docs or something like that, or looking unremorseful. You know, she sat there as she's looking at the court, as you know, as the bagel was being, you know, was being hit there by the judge as he delivered the final judgment. So there are those words, those emotions in which we put there that you may not find. Maybe yes, AI can describe, guys, we can tell it, we can prompt it, however, it is not the same.
That is so true. I was talking to someone last night, in fact, about my fear. So I run a consultancy, right? And I was like, I'm using AI a lot. And I was worried that my clients will be like, then we don't need you. But the more I work with them, the more I realize the AI needs something to run with, right? But but over and above that, what AI doesn't have is the ability to interpret the results. It can analyze and give you and break it down, but it can't interpret. And I think the reason for that is that it doesn't have context. And that is what you're speaking to, that context. Why this matters, how we're seeing it, how will this land to people who are not here, who we get the responsibility or have the responsibility to report to. So that's very interesting that you say that. And newsrooms often say that AI will support journalists instead of replacing them. In practice, how can organizations like ourselves really ensure this balance, especially in areas requiring human sensitivity, like conflict reporting or investigative work?
So, I'm going today. I'm reporting a lot to my class, guys. Don't mind me. I'm still in school. So, in looking at that, you know, we also had, for example, to study, I think it's the New York Times. I forgot the other one. There were two newsrooms, big newsrooms, that have actually integrated, you know, AI into their newsrooms. So what they do, is that when they are reading an article, they have the prompt up on top of the article saying, summarize this article. And they are the ones who worked on it. So it's not just a random AI tool that is there, because they have done that. And then somewhere in between the article, they would like, they have another point, another feature where they say, bullet point this. And then it gives you just bullet points, like you go. And they actually even ask you, was this helpful? Was this not helpful, right? And those are big newsrooms that I have actually integrated, because it's to help them. Not to say that we're no longer working, we're no longer doing this, but however, to also make your experience as the reader, as the listener, as the watcher, to be much more, because we know that these days, guys, you're just busy.
We really are.
We don't have time to be reading a five-minute article. That's how the nature of the people of the generation is now. So it's able, you know, to make that five-minute article a one-minute for you, right? So that it helps you, not that it doesn't take away. And then you may find that after that summary, it says read more. And then now when you click on that, now you find the whole lengthy article, the detail to detail, you know, that you're going to get. So it is something that is, some newsrooms are using, and also using it within the safety of the newsroom guidelines that they have as organizations. So organizations, for example, like us, well, we don't really do conflict or everything else. So it would be a tool, for example, for AWRC Media to use in terms of when we're doing our research, you know, in terms of, you can go there. Well, I don't want to mention the AI tools that are there, but then you can go there and maybe ask it, Uti, in the last 3 months, what are some of the key religious words that people have been Googling, you know? It's able to pull that data for you and tell you, no, people search for salvation, they search for hope, they search for grief, they search for that. Then when we now take that, okay, now it has given us five, then we take the core themes and then we're like, oh, to the producers, guys, let's look at sub-themes that we can maybe speak about in terms of grief, in terms of hope, because this is what people are Googling according to this particular tool. And people will argue, hi, man, let's do the old-fashioned way. You can just go to Google and do that. Yes, we can. However, sorry to say this, guys. Yazi, things are so much. There's so much to do now. There's so much, all of those things. We're not saying it's replacing us because we don't have time. However, it's making things a little bit easier because at the end of the day, that whole content still lies with us, you know. It can give me grief, but what about grief? It still lies with us, for example, as producers. It still lies with you as the presenter to say, no, I'm speaking to Zanella today maybe about budgeting for parents as a mom. How does she budget for kaftin as a parent, right? It has given you an idea that as parents, we are looking for ways how to budget for this thing. Because sometimes the kids, they want peanut butter. The other day, they don't want peanut butter. The other days, they come back to school. They're like, mommy, can I please have a better lunch box? Like, you are all over the ways. And then now it has given you that. You're like, oh, no, man. How about I share tips maybe the other day on how 5 day scaffolding much more now. Still the extra work that we do, we're putting aside. That is the work that we're putting in. And as the presenters, for example, of AWR now, when you are coming, obviously you're not robots, like really now. You would be putting in that in motion. You would be putting in your experiences. You would be putting in, you know, your stories that you have had with people. Maybe you've spoken to me on the corridor. I said, I found this Godi where you can buy peanut butter for cheap. You know, you bring in those things. Hi, man. You know, there's this other parent who said, when you buy in bulk, it actually helps. So that is something that AI won't tell you.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
That's so good. So I'm no journalist by any stretch of imagination, right? But I've gotten so fascinated by the work of journalism because I sit behind this mic and on this chair. And I'm realizing that skills are really the currency of journalism. So I want to hear from you. If machines are taking on more roles, how might this shift the way journalists and perhaps even presenters are trained and valued in this profession?
You know, Mbumi, what the cry is, ne? So I'm not a practicing journalist. Let me just say that. I've studied it, I've practiced it, but then now I'm really back to school studying it and whatnot. The conversation that is there, it's a concern that the newsroom has been juniorized, right? Meaning that we have taken the more youngsters, thrown them in into the deep end. They don't know what they're doing sometimes. Sometimes they do, but that experience, right? And the people that have the veterans, if you could call them, the people that know Ugutaibu, you don't just walk into a political briefing and just report on what they said. You have to look at people. They are no longer in the industry that I've worked with before. They've left the industry.
Your line is sabotaging you.
Yes, AI will not replace us. But it's also the training that we need for our younger generation or our younger generalists, saying it's a tool that you can use, not saying you rely on it. It's a tool that you need to use. You still need to go now with this dialogue thing happening in South Africa. You still need to go and attend those national dialogues. You still need to speak to these various people that are there, you understand? So in terms of training, there's a lot in which we still need to do to our journalists so that the newsrooms do not become faceless at the end of the day. And some may say, Ibo, we have even seen movies where now we're gonna be in technology left, right and center. Yes, but there are certain industries that they cannot be completely replaced by the machines, and journalism is one of them. I thought I was also there. I'm like, die ding. But now studying more about it, you know, in being in conversation with people in the field and our lecturers, well, they are more learned than us. It has opened my eyes to say, indeed, that is true. it cannot replace us. And what we need now is that training of how do we better use it, how do we better tell the stories better with its assistance, not by it telling the stories.
You know, this is what makes TD Madia's passing, this is what made it so profound, because she was essentially a powerhouse of politics, right?
Yep.
And you know what you're saying is so significant and so powerful, because we've got AI, we've got the tools, we've got the interviews that she's done on politricking, on 702 EWN, and we've got those things. But we still felt that her loss was a profound loss, not just as a human being, but to the industry, because they are not her. Everything is out there that she's done, but the way she thinks about it, the archives that she may not have literally documented or put in some platform or storage unit or cloud, the fact that when situations come up, she's able to tap back into what she knows, that context is what we're missing now. That brain is what we're missing. So I love what she's saying about it can never replace the human being. It is a complementary tool, but also we need to realize that it's a complementary tool and not let it overtake us or replace us inadvertently. True. And I do want to talk about the bias, right? The harmful messages that can be produced by AI, or even factually incorrect content, because sometimes it gives fake content. Your husband sent a message to say AI hallucinations, presenting things as facts without checking those, right? So when that happens, when all of that information is put out, who's responsible? Is it the developer? Is it the newsroom? Is it the journalist who clicked publish or who stood behind a mic and shared what wasn't verified?
Hey, that's a very big debate, my sister.
Yeah.
It's a very big debate. Mm. However, as journalists, we have a responsibility. Mm. Our responsibility is to educate, is to inform. Mm. Right. So we cannot inform people misinformation.
Yeah.
So hence, we have to verify. We have to check. Like I think a couple of years ago, when deepfake came out, people were like, "Yo, the world is gonna end."
Yes.
You know, where you would see, for example, we know that U.S. President Donald Trump, he's loved by all of these things, and they love using him, you know, to deepfake things.
Yeah.
If, for example, let's speak about South African President Cyril Ramaphosa. Mm. Nothing. Well, I've not really seen anyone deepfaking him or anything else. Maybe they have not really tried or whatever. But if a speech were to come out of the president, Cyril Ramaphosa, maybe it's a voice note or saying this, before you click retweet, before you write an article of saying President Cyril Ramaphosa has said the nation, blah, 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 what's stopping us from calling his spokesperson?
Mm-hmm.
Hi, hello, with Magwenya. I just want to verify.
Yeah.
There is this thing that the president has said. Is it true? You get that confirmation, right? Because it's also our responsibility. Yes, we can say hi, Bo, but it was already out there. We just shared. No, you do not do that, right? And one thing, you know, that we've also discussed, you know, now that you've mentioned, for example, Siri, we also have Criselda Lewis in our class. And then she was like, hey, there have been stories where people have been wanting to break the story, but I had to put my foot down in the newsroom. I was like, no.
No.
It has not been confirmed. Mm. It also goes, for example, to people's death, which I don't know why with death, you know, it's so, for lack of a better word, it's so interesting. You would know that someone has died.
Yeah.
But up until an official statement is said, or for me, spokesperson, we actually really hold it as journalists.
Mm.
And that asks you that thing with Haibo, but we all know Uguti so-and-so has died. Why is it this thing not being reported? It's because our duty is to inform, so therefore we cannot misinform. Mm. What if this thing that is trending on social media is false and we have written an article? Now we have to go and take it down and say, no, we apologize, it was wrong. We have already done damage.
Mm.
I remember when we were doing ethics, it was an issue of the greater good and the greater harm.
Yeah.
You know, some of those things, like, are we doing it, but what harm is this going to do?
Mm.
Right. So if we now report saying, I know the repo rate for South Africa is now 50, up by 50 basis points, while Kanyaho has not said that, what are we doing to people's lives?
Yeah.
Because now people are going to start worrying, saying, for sure, I know, for sure, it's just red, you're just so yummy, you're my car. But it's not true, you understand? Or even if it's true, but the authorities have not done it. So if we have a scoop, because that's what we live on, if now we have a scoop, say, hypo, nasty scoop, go to a cabinet reshuffle, it's happening, to... Hey, la, have your contacts, call your contacts. Hello, is this true?
Yeah.
Then they say, yes, it's true. Sources that you know that should you be taken to the BCCSA, they would be able to say, you want to learn. So it's also our responsibility. So one of the things that as journalists, we have to stick to our values and our ethics.
Yeah.
And it's to educate and to inform. Every other thing, say, but let them break the news, guys, trend down, guys, make the story trend. When we come, we won't just give you a one-liner. We'll give you a one-liner, we'll give you the context, we'll give you the way forward, and we'll give you the history, if needed be. You understand? So it's, we can go and say, no, yeah, it's the developer, Aibo. It developer just wrote the code. He did not say click, send. He did not do this. You understand? So it's our duty to stick to our values and our ethics, say, to educate and inform, and we are not supposed to share misinformation.
You know, Zanele, that sounds so basic. Educate and inform, but it's at the heart of journalism. And what I don't think people realize just how impactful those two things are. And I think maybe they do because people don't watch the news anymore. And the reason they don't is because they say, news makes me sad, it makes me depressed. And I can just imagine if somebody will make a decision like, I'd rather not know because knowing puts me in the state, then it puts such emphasis, heavy emphasis and significance on the work of journalism because you can literally determine how people interact with the world based on, number one, what you share, and number two, how you share it, whether it's verified, it's true, and whether you're bringing your heart and your soul to it. Because also people don't want to be told hard facts in a hard way. And it goes back to the thing you were saying earlier, humanizing it makes all the difference and adding that context makes all the difference. Maybe just a quick just on the thing that we said, a piggyback is, how can people determine that something is deepfake? How can they protect themselves from that deception?
So that one is also a bit tricky when I'm booming because the see now my education is coming out. I'm actually sounding like a pastor now. the South African Editors Forum, for example, SANEF, right? They commissioned a report, I think it was in 2019. We call it now the Satchel Report. And that report was also did a lot of work in terms of the journalism field because there were a lot of things. And one of the things that they also looked at and that came out is that people have lost trust in the news, right? They've lost trust in journalism. So now it becomes a problem when it's like that, when we are not going to, I'm going to use, it's an example, please don't sue me. We SABC comes up and say this, we no longer trust these people because of what of past experiences that they can be bought, you know, they can be rogue, they can be XYZ. But then now we go to Twitter, there's a deep fake of president, they're saying things that you're like, and that what can I, you know, kind of a thing. So now it's a matter of saying that as much as we do not have our trust, in fact, in news agencies and journalists has diminished. Let's trust them on certain things. Ne? On certain things, let's trust them. Verify.
Yeah.
Look for those news agencies. You're like, these ones are gabbers. Let's not just rely on social media because all of us want to trend. All of us want to make the news. But just go. If they report saying this, and like, okay, it's not, make sure. Let's wait for those reputable news sites to report on it, even though we don't trust them, because we know we don't trust them.
Yeah,
wait for them to report it, right? Or have those people that you know. For example, Mandy Winner, anything she says, I know it's true.
Yes,
kind of situation, right?
Yeah.
As you're saying, for example, Utsidi, we know that everything that Utsidi was said was true. Yeah. Okay, no, let me follow Criselda, for example, or Iman. I know that these people, everything they're gonna say, it's true. They hardly share things that are not the truth.
Yeah.
You know, so just have those few journalists or few news agencies that you are going to follow in your life. If Trump comes up now, we know whatever he's saying on his Truth Social, we know that his accounts are verified and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
But if now you want to hear more analysis and details and stuff like that, just go to those trusted people, trusted sites, and then follow those ones as well. You take this one, you listen to them with a pinch of salt, which let me verify with this one, because they, as much as we don't have an oath like the HIPAA oath per se, for doctors good to do no harm, we actually have ethics that we abide by, you can't just be sharing normally.
You know, I learned this the hard way. So when I was starting out here, you know, very zealous and enthusiastic, there was a story that was shared, or an article, a clip that was shared by a friend of mine on a friendship group of ours. And I was like, oh, this is such a good story for my show. Did I not run with that thing?
How?
Later to be told, the Reserve Bank has refuted every claim of this. I was just like, what did I do? I felt so bad. And I think in that moment I understood, this is a platform. This is a platform that people actually listen and tune into. But this is a platform meaning you are responsible for the truth. Since that day, there is no morning when I don't listen to the Clemens Manyathela show. On my drive here, if it's not Mandy Wiener, it's going to be John Perlman. I'm literally consuming so much because I need to know that what I'm hearing or what I know is really true. Checking with sources like Business Tech, because I understood the responsibility. So what you're saying is so, so profound. And I think should awaken everybody who's maybe not even journalists, but everybody who's in a who's in a position where they're responsible for disseminating information, whether this is a manager at work or whatever position you're in, where you have to give people information for them to make decisions. You cannot take it lightly. And AI cannot be the only context that you have, because it lacks none. It lacks any context.
True.
Yeah. True. And the truth is, these AI models learn from data, right? But data carries a lot of bias. So what steps are being taken, or should be taken, must I say, to ensure that AI doesn't replicate or even amplify these harmful stereotypes in the stories that we consume?
We just need to be careful, Mbumi, as users of AI.
Yeah.
As simple as that, because we can't go to these developers. I even forget their names. Yes, I had them at the back of my mind, but we can't go and sue them or harass them. Well, you can, but you need big pockets to take big tech to court anyway. But it's also us being responsible users of these things. And the answer to your question also ties up, for example, to what you have shared. Let us be responsible.
Yeah.
Do you understand?
Yeah.
I'm having these social media platforms. I'm a journalist. I need to be careful, number one, of what I'm sharing. Number two, I need to be responsible, because I know, even if I say, guys, I only have 10 followers, those 10 followers are following me for a reason. Because maybe for them, I'm a reason of, you understand? So now when I prompt in those prompts on AI, I prompt them. I mean, hey, Pella, you'll prompt AI, will give you what you want.
And it will say, oh, girl, you're onto something. Fire emoji.
You're onto something.
You're like, yes.
You know? Yes. Yeah, well, it will give you what you want. So in your corner, when I'm, in order to be safe, in order for AI not to be doing all of these things, is that we just have to be careful with it. I'll quickly make an example with the Gen Z Bible. I don't know if you've read it. I've read it a little bit. Well, I've referenced to it when I'm having conversations in order for that. What they did with that is that they prompted, right, the AI agents to look at the language that the Gen Zs are using. Our phones, our social media, and stuff like that. And then they created that Bible. They took the NKJV Bible, translated it using the Gen Z Bible. Where do you think AI got that language, guys? Do we really think someone sat and wrote, a big man upstairs, a big G? No! It scoured wide, like our digital footprint. Oh, this is how people speak. If it was the South, if it scoured the South African, I'm sure God would have been hot man.
True.
Because the same things like big G. So it's not like this thing, there's someone sitting there spewing hate speech, then no, it actually sits and it observes, it takes. And then now when I say, what are some of the hateful things that Donald Trump has said, it will
yeah,
a million pages.
Yeah.
Because it's there on the digital footprint. Mm. And also to say, let us be careful. Digital footprint. We can never overemphasize that.
Mm.
Digital footprint, whether you're a journalist, whether you're following journalists, whether you yourself, you're an aspiring person in the digital world,
yeah,
your digital footprint matters.
It matters.
Yeah.
It really matters. And, you know, I'm thinking now with this guy that was assassinated, this Charlie Kirk guy.
Yeah.
The VP stood up and said, yeah, what was said about Charlie is not true. And people are just like, what do you mean? Here's a video saying exactly what she's saying he didn't say.
Yep.
So digital footprint is very, very, very important. Oh, man. You know what? I think from this conversation, I gathered that AI and journalism is not just a technical issue. It's really an ethical crossroads. People need to make a decision. Will I go with this? Will I not? It has to be informed. Yep. We're not just consuming information to spew it. We are actually responsible for shaping people's thoughts and perhaps even their lives. And I think we've seen that while AI can be a powerful ally, it can replace the it cannot rather replace the values at the heart of journalism, which you so rightfully mentioned. It's truth, it's accountability and humanity. So thank you so much for unpacking this tough but vital conversation with me. You give us so much clarity. And yeah, man, I really think our listeners, I hope that our listeners can realize that the future of news is not only shaped by technology, but also by the standards that we demand as consumers of truth. You know, so thank you so much for gracing our platform tonight. All the best there in Tohoyandou.
Yeah, no, thank you so much, Mpumi. Thank you. It was a very interesting conversation. But as I leave, I would just say to our listeners that have those two or three people that you know are reliable and they're credible.
Yeah.
And also those news sites as well. Last one before I go, I was laughing today. Someone posted a picture of this other celebrity in South Africa and another picture of another woman. They're like, yo, this age difference is thing. And then someone, like, they kept prompting that AI thing and it kept giving them the wrong answer of the person sending to this particular celebrity.
Yeah.
At the end of that whole thread, it said, no, so-and-so is the one who's wearing beige.
Mm.
And we all know that's not the person. Say, this thing hallucinates, it does not know everything. It does not know anything. If I'm standing with Mpumi, it doesn't stop it from saying, I am Pumi, Pumi is me, because it does not know. You understand? So let us have those few people that we know are credible. We're going to follow for our news, for business news, for health news, for yonke into. Basically, have your people, have your news agencies that you read, you listen to and everything else, and you'll be fine. And also, let us be careful with the information we ourselves, you know, put out there, because we do not know how that's going to affect another person, how it's going to impact another person, how it's going to make another person's life upside down. We do not know. Or tomorrow, how it's going to help harm us ourselves.
Yeah.
If going for an interview, they will check. They're like, hi, Bo.
Wait, Jani,
this you? No, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You understand? And us as journalists as well, the main thing is let us stick to our ethics and our values. When we stick to that, whether AI is there or not, however, our ethics and our values, it's what's going to make us to be good journalists, is what's going to make us to take out good news that is going to inform and educate the nations wherever we are.
This conversation has actually made me appreciate all those reports and essays that I had to hand in at varsity where they were saying you need to reference Harvard style referencing. And I was like, no, we don't want to do this. But now it's like they knew that there'll come a time where you get so much information. If it's not credible and you can't point to a credible source, you will be in trouble. So perhaps let's go back to the Harvard referencing styles with everything that we do. Even when AI makes it easy and gives us information, let's still go back and say, but is this true? That is our responsibility. Yeah. Thank you, Zan.
Thank you so much for me.
So
thank
much
you,
for a brief conversation. All the best.
Thank you. Hey, bye.
Sure. This has been Tech Innovation Tuesday, where we don't just watch the future unfold. We interrogate it. Do you see what I did there? journalism? Investigate? Whatever. I am Nompumelelo Mbonani, and I hope you have just made sense of your business. Fresh mercies tomorrow. Ciao for now.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.